This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
Rachel Zimmerman and Carrie Goldberg, co-hosts of WBUR's Common Health Blogger here, as they are on most Tuesdays, to walk us through the latest health news. Hi there, ladies.
Hello, Meghna.
So today, we're going to talk a little bit about birth control, because this month, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services announced that health insurance companies will no longer be able to charge co-payments, co-insurance, or a deductible for women's preventative services, including birth control. That's drawn a great deal of attention, including from Stephen Colbert.
A woman's health decisions are a private matter between her priest and her husband. Besides, folks, I don't believe in birth control. If you want to control your fertility, do it the way God intended, with a cold, loveless marriage.
Okay, so that's Stephen Colbert's take. But Rachel, what do these guidelines really mandate?
Well, can't we just listen to all of Colbert instead of talking to me?
You put a link to it on the Common Health blog.
We
though,
did.
Right?
Okay. It's excellent. So just to take a step back. So a major goal of the federal health reform law was to increase the use of preventative services, right? It's better to prevent illness than to get sick and have to treat it and pay much more for it. So in that vein, the federal government asked this advisory body, the Institute of Medicine, to come up with a list of important, effective preventative health services for women. They came back with a bunch of guidelines, including screening for gestational diabetes, counseling about sexually transmitted diseases, support for breastfeeding, coverage of breast pumps and lactation counseling, as well as FDA-approved birth control for women with no copays, no additional fees. And of course, the contraceptive piece is the one that's gotten all the attention, but there are a bunch of recommendations that the U.S. Health and Human Services have adopted. They've adopted all of the recommendations.
So all forms of birth control, FDA-approved, as you said, but really the point was to make preventative services as a whole for women something that you didn't have to, you know, do much out-of-pocket expense for.
Right, more accessible, completely affordable.
And so when do these guidelines go into effect?
In about a year, they'll start being phased in after August of 2012. But by January 2013, they should be fully in effect.
For all insurance plans.
That's right.
Okay. So I understand that some health plans might actually be exempt, though, from the requirement to cover contraceptives?
Right. Well, as you might imagine, some religious conservatives weren't too happy about this provision. They don't really like contraceptives, and free contraceptives are even worse. So the plan does offer a religious opt-out provision. So religious employers would be exempt from the requirement to cover contraceptive services.
Okay. So, Carrie, as Rachel mentioned, it seems that under these new guidelines, all of federally approved contraceptives would no longer require patient copays. The pill, I guess, mm-hmm. but also the IUD?
That's right.
Federally approved?
Yes, federally approved, the intrauterine device. And actually for IUDs, copays and deductibles might have been a particularly high barrier because they can cost several hundred dollars to have implanted.
Oh, really?
Up front.
Okay. So you recently wrote about this in Common Health, about an increase in IUD use amongst women?
Yes. It's actually a very striking increase. It's over the last few years, it's gone from only about 2% of American women to closer to 6%. And it's particularly striking because IUDs were long out of style, very sort of blackened and tarnished, their reputation was. And it's a striking resurgence. Some people are even talking about an IUD renaissance.
Well, now, why is that? Because I remember, you know, first learning about them in middle school, and it seemed to be kind of an odd, I shouldn't say odd, but it was less straightforward than the idea of taking a pill every day, because you implant the IUD for a period of how much time? Weeks? Months?
Years.
Years.
Oh, no, years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is it because of that you don't have to take a pill every day that women are now returning to this idea that, hey, it's a good thing?
Well, that's definitely part of it. I mean, there's this stunning statistic that even in this country where there's fairly wide access to birth control, nearly half of all pregnancies are accidental. So we're clearly very bad at the kind of birth control that requires what they call user compliance. It's hard to remember every pill, to remember every condom. And what the IUD offers is an alternative in which, as one of our experts quoted on Common Health said, it only takes one act. You just have the act of getting an IUD implanted, and then you're set for years if it works out for you.
But on the other hand, you had mentioned the IUD's checkered past. I
yes.
mean, the thing that always made me not necessarily feel uncomfortable, but the abiding lesson I learned from my middle school days was that there's the possibility of infection because you are actually implanting a device into the uterus.
Yes, and I grew up with that same feeling. It's largely because of a really horrible story that took place in the 1970s. There was an IUD called the Dalcon Shield, and it had a very serious design flaw. It had a sort of a tail, and the tail would actually like wick bacteria up from the vagina into the uterus, which is normally a sterile environment. And so many, many, many women got infections. They had infertility. It was really a horrible debacle.
But that was a generation ago. That problem no longer exists?
That is what the experts are saying. And in fact, you know, IUDs have been growing in use over the last few years, and we're not hearing about any similar fiasco. So although IUDs are not seen as a perfect form of birth control and they can have side effects and complications, there's nothing like the Dalcon Shield happening now.
So there are now two brands of IUDs in the United States. Mirena?
Mm-hmm.
Mirena. Which emits, I guess, a small amount of synthetic progesterone.
Right.
And what's the name of the other one?
And the other one is Paragard, okay. And that is a copper-containing IUD.
Copper. So it's it's just a pure physical barrier?
Yes, there are no hormones coming from that one. And so it's a nice option for women who might have problems with the hormones.
Oh, okay. And is that why the Paragard seems to have a growing following?
They both do.
They're
both very much on the rise. And a lot of what's fueling the rise actually seems to be sort of sales pitches, although they're in no sinister way, but actually there's a strong push for IUDs from contraception experts and gynecologists and obstetricians who are saying, you know, IUDs have really changed from the 1970s and they really are a very attractive option now.
So attractive that you tried one?
Yes, Meghna. In fact, my post on Common Health describes my own experience over the last 7 years having an IUD. I have the Mirena, which is the kind that has hormones. And I did at first have quite a bit of spotting, which is really quite a pain. But then it passed. And an interesting thing about the Mirena is that it makes your periods almost go away. So for women who find that appealing, it's a nice little side effect.
Well, Rachel walked us through the new federal guidelines about insurance companies having to cover the costs and individual women not having to have copays or deductibles for preventative services, including things like IUDs. Mm-hmm. But you had also mentioned that they can be more expensive, right? Hundreds of dollars?
Yes. But so what's so interesting about the coming era with these new federal guidelines is that there was a study in St. Louis that looked at what would happen if women did not have to pay anything for mm-hmm. their birth control. And what the researchers did was they explained all the different birth control options to all the women in the study, and more than half of them ended up choosing IUDs. So it's quite intriguing to see what will happen once this stuff really is free for everybody. There could be a real surge in use of IUDs.
Well, Kerry Goldberg and Rachel Zimmerman, co-hosts of WBUR's Common Health blog, thank you both so much.
Our pleasure.
Thanks, Raina.
You can find links to Kerry and Rachel's Common Health articles at our website, radioboston.org.
And still ahead on our show, Cape Cod author Peter Manso and his controversial new book about the murder of Krista Worthington in 2002. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.